6:20, she may do so, and we will open the meeting for questions. As a reminder, please be aware that if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the Light a Candle podcast. Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed in the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Laura.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laura, grateful compulsive overeater.
Hi, Laura.
I have something on my phone I might want to refer to, so I'm gonna leave it here. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Seppi, for asking me, and hello to everyone I've known for a really long time, and welcome to the newcomers, and congratulations to the chip takers. I came to OA in 1989. August 17th was my first meeting. I was in my mid-30s at the time, and I spent all my life prior to that struggling with food, being held prisoner by it, and thinking that Monday I'll be able to stop. And Monday would come, and I was knee-deep in M&Ms. And I grew up not being a fat kid, but I was taller than everybody in my class. Maybe one or two of the other girls were my height. And so I didn't quite fit in as, you know, clothes kids my age wore. And my mom watched my food like a hawk. And she, as I got into my teens, she always was promising me new clothes if I would lose weight. And so I really learned very early that I wasn't enough, just like I was, and that if only I could do or be A, B, and C, I would be okay. And I lived that myth until I'd been in OA for a little while, actually. I never lived a deeply spiritual life. My parents were very secular, so we were very culturally our religion that we were. But nobody in my house believed in God. For some weird reason, I did. And but as I grew up and, you know, went to college and blah, 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 you know, and struggled with food all the time and got bigger and bigger and bigger, I only felt close to God when I was eating, when I wasn't compulsively overeating, which was hardly ever. And I thought, you know, and I felt embarrassed to try to pray to God because, you know, he wouldn't really want to have anything to do with me because I was, you know, I really believed that I was a bad person. And what happened in OA was that I found out that I was a sick person. Instead of being a bad person trying to be good, I was a sick person trying to get well. And so I know I have 40 minutes, but I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about what it was like, because I think we all know what it's like, you know, or what it was like, and what it can be like. And I never wanted to get any help, because it was so, like, in my mind, and my dad was kind of like this, like, you don't need help, you know. Like, he never said that to me, but it was kind of like going to any kind of therapy. And also, just remember, I mean, I'm going to be 70, like, in a week or two, which is just horrifying. But consider the alternative. But so we're talking about the 60s, you know, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, and in the 60s and the 70s. And it wasn't It just, people didn't talk about going to counselors. It wasn't as common, and nobody talked about eating disorders. You know, you just were overweight and you should diet and go to Weight Watchers or whatever. And then, you know, that was the way that it was, and nobody talked about it. They didn't have, I think they did talk about obesity in school. I remember that word because it just was such a horrible word. And I was never obese until I got to be in my 20s, really. But I felt obese my whole life. And so I never went to any of those things. I never sought help. I didn't think I needed help. I thought, well, I'm really successful at everything I wanted to do. And I met the man who I've been married to for 30-something years. We met when I was in my 20s. And I thought, you know, if only I could just stop gaining weight, you know. And it never quite connected with me that it was connected to how much I was eating. I mean, it did, but I did not want to admit that. I didn't want to think about that. I thought if I just worked hard enough, I could lose weight. And then everything would be fine. And I first heard about, well, I knew about AA. I had heard of AA. You know, sort of everybody's heard of AA, even back then, of course. And I was very clear that what AA did worked, and that if you had a problem with alcohol, you went to AA and you got better. I don't know where I learned that from, but somehow I did. And then I worked for a man in my, well, okay, so now we're talking about the sort of the mid 80s, and I had a job with a man who was a sober alcoholic. You'd never know it by his behavior, but he went to AA. He worked a good program, and he helped a lot of people. And one of the biggest humiliations I remember having was that I didn't qualify for the company insurance program because I was too fat. And he said to me, he paid for my insurance in any way, like a private insurance or whatever, which was very nice of him. And but I remember he said to me, you know, there's a program for I don't know if he said compulsive overeaters, but he mentioned OA. And he even said, I know someone who goes, and if you would be interested, she would be happy to take you to a meeting. And I was like, oh, no thanks. It's not for me. But it planted a seed. I'd never heard of OA up until that point. And more and more years of struggle. And when I got married in 86. And, you know, I came to OA in 89, as I said. And by the time I came to OA, I was almost 250 pounds. And but I didn't think it showed, you know. I mean, you know how much of a denial that I was in. I think we all can relate to that, or maybe some of you can. The TV movie My Name Is Bill W. was on TV that year with you know, story of the founders of AA, and I watched it and I was mesmerized by it. I didn't know anything about the 12 steps, you know, and I just saw this man who had a wreck of a life and he became whole through AA, And I was suffering, you know, I was miserable, you know, I was trying to stop. And I don't know that I wanted to stop. I just wanted to stop gaining weight. And And I have this wonderful doctor who, he's actually not my doctor anymore now, but he's still my husband's, and so I see him all the time. And, you know, I'd like to, like, thank him for my life, and sometimes I do almost every time I see him. At least I think about it. I was getting high blood pressure, and my solution, and the shame, you know, the shame of it, the shame of how I felt about myself every time I would go to a doctor, because sometimes I did go to doctors who would say, well, you know, you need to lose weight. And this doctor never told me I had to lose weight. He said, well, your blood pressure's high, and that's a little concerning. And I said, oh, okay, I'll lose weight. And, of course, not having any intention of doing it, or maybe I had an intention, but I certainly didn't know how. And he said, you know, what might be better is if you try to take better care of yourself. Mm. And those were the magic words for me. And it was the first time in my life at that age, age 35, that I ever thought of that, and that I ever made a decision to check out OA. I didn't want to go somewhere I had to pay, because my parents had sent me to a nutritionist where they paid, then I paid, and, you know, that ended up in... I was telling this to someone the other day. She told me I could eat hard candy. So I said, oh, you mean like a sugar daddy? Remember those bars? You know? And no, she said, not that. But I ate it anyway. And that was the end of the nutritionist. I called OA. You could call. There was no internet back then. And I called, and I found out there was a meeting somewhat near my office on Thursday at 2 p.m. And, you know, it wasn't even lunchtime. I mean, meaning that I could leave my office and go to the meeting, but it wasn't exactly a convenient time. Anyway, I got all dressed up. I mean, I dressed up for work anyway, but I remember wanting to, you know, show how cool I was, and I wore nice clothes, you know, and I was in so much pain, and I went to this meeting. It was in the Lions Club on Robertson. A lot of you who I've known for so many years, some beloved friends are here, remember that place. And I walked into A New Life, and I saw the 12 steps on the wall and the 12 traditions. I heard people talking about food, the way that I ate food. I never knew that, like I said, it wasn't commonly discussed or known. I heard people talking about eating the way that I did, and I saw the 12 steps. And I saw the first step, which was, you know, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. And I was like, yeah, that's me. That feels good to say. And then I saw the second step, which was about God, you know, came or a power greater than ourselves. And I love how, you know, I mean, we all probably do too, you know, a lot of the history of the way the steps were written. And it was originally full of God, and they decided they needed to not scare people off by referring to a power greater than oneself. And that's the gift of the program. For me, especially, I think, because my view of God was kind of unconventional. And unconventional in the sense that I believed that there was a God that was my understanding of God. I mean, that's why I think it resonated so much when I saw how that was put. And also, I'll just sort of add here, I think many of us know, or we all know, that when Roseanne started OA, she got rid of all the references to any spiritual people and or concepts, and she realized soon after that, you know, that had to be part of it. So I say that because I think the hand of God brought me to OA, and I see that, and I started seeing the hand of God in everything, from the way that the literature was written, from the way OA started, and I heard people talking at this meeting about just the way they were tyrannized by food, which is, again, how I felt. And I just felt so comfortable. I heard people saying they don't eat flour or sugar. And that was very scary, because that wasn't what I had any intention of not doing. But other people talked about, you know, how they ate three moderate meals a day or whatever it was. And nobody stood up and pointed at me and said, you need to lose weight. Nobody talked about weight that much. I remember the first speaker, I remember her name. I don't know if she's still in OA, but she, you know, she made a big difference because she talked about that she had lost maybe 10 pounds or something like that. I mean, at that point, I had over 100 pounds to lose, and I didn't think I could ever do that. I knew I couldn't do that, but I don't know, 10 pounds sounded sort of doable. So I got some literature. I didn't get a big book right off, but I got a pamphlet. It was called A Commitment to Abstinence, and they still have a version of it, but this particular version of it talked about abstinence was three meals a day and staying away from all individual binge foods. So unlike the scary-sounding no sugar, no flour, to me, 3 meals a day and staying away from all individual binge foods, many of which had sugar in them, you know, I felt like that was something that I could try. And so that was a Thursday. And I started to crave OA the way that I craved food. And I couldn't wait to come back the next Thursday. And I did. And, you know, same thing. I heard a speaker just talk about this transformation in their life. And I probably must have gotten a big book at that point. And so that was the next Thursday. And so 3 days after that was a Saturday, the 26th of August, 1989. And I was having lunch with my sister. And usually Saturdays were my binge day. Like, I attempted to diet during the week. I attempted and failed over and over again. But Saturdays, you know, anything goes. And I would buy stuff and save it for Saturdays. Anyway, but this particular Saturday, I was going out. So on Friday night, and I was still binging, by the way. By then, I mean, a week and a half of program isn't a lot, but it was enough for me to hear, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. It was hearing how it works, those unbelievably beautiful words that we heard in the beginning of this meeting tonight. You know, I don't know if I remembered this so much, but, you know, that no human power could have relieved our compulsive overeating, or that we were compulsive overeaters and could not manage our own lives. I could not manage my own life. I knew that. be that probably no human power could have relieved our compulsive overeating, but that God could and would if he were sought. And I decided to seek God. I made a decision. And that Friday night, I could picture this like it was yesterday. I was sitting in bed, finishing a giant-sized bag of M&Ms, which is how I used to eat them. I had decided that 3 meals a day was something I wanted to try, and I had made a list of 3 or 4 individual binge foods, like M&Ms, that I couldn't eat with any sanity. And I must have been reading some program literature. And so I said to my husband, and the bag was not empty. So the miracle was that I said to my husband, here, please take this, I'm done with that. And I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of, you know, I understood God. I remember my concept of God was that God likes me when I'm eating well, and he's mad at me when, like my mother, you know. So, but that was okay, because that was enough for that moment. And I literally went like this, God, please help me abstain tomorrow. And I really got the concept also, by the way, that it was one day at a time, that I didn't have to do it for the rest of my life. I could try it for one day and see what happened. And I remember we went to this mall, and I ate. They had a salad bar, and I ate like a normal amount of food, or whatever I thought normal was at the time. And then I don't remember what I had for dinner, but all of a sudden it's like I didn't have any of my candy. I didn't have any of my things that I used to binge on. I didn't feel like I had to have more so I could fill up that awful hole in me that when I was alone just, you know, was just impossible to deal without food. My feelings, you know, I had feelings and I couldn't deal with them without food, but that day I could. And at the end of that day, it was August 26, 1989, as I've probably said 6 times, I had one day of abstinence, and it was like a miracle. It was a miracle. I couldn't believe that had happened. Just because I admitted I was powerless, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of that God, or that higher power. And then I had 2 days. And I couldn't wait for 30 days because I wanted to get one of those white chips, or they were white back then. And yeah, they're not the same. They were like poker chips, like literally poker chips, but they had something written on them. And I still have my newcomer chip, which is broken, but I keep it anyway. And I still have every single chip I ever took. I got to 30 days, and I was like, it's really like, you know, we all know that freedom that comes from, like, I think somebody talked about that, I think you did, about, you know, mentioning just feeling free, feeling different, and knowing that I didn't have to rely on myself anymore, that I could rely on God as I understood him. Even though, you know, I was worried if I broke my abstinence, then, you know, God would get mad at me. But I still believed in that kind of God, I think. I mean, I was a week in, or a month in program, you know. I hadn't even begun working the steps. Wow. So all of a sudden it was Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving was my 90th day, and I was a little worried. What am I going to do, you know? And I just did what I'd been doing, which was I asked God for help. And all of a sudden, Thanksgiving was over, and I ate, it was Thursday, you know, so I just ate a Thursday type meal, quantity wise. And by this time I had a sponsor, by this time I had read the big book, and I want to repeat this because this was so important. I started feeding myself with the literature of the program and with meetings. I wasn't good at calling people. I did have a sponsor, like I said, so I must have called her. And I started working the steps by then. And, you know, I was on a pink cloud for a very long time, because to wake up every morning and feel clean and feel different, you know, it was just so incredible. And so my first sponsor, when we got to step three, she told me to write down ten qualities that I wanted in God, or whatever she said. It was something about ten. List 10 things that describes your higher power. So I did that. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of years, I worked 1, 2, and 3. I went to meetings. I started going to as many meetings as I could, because, again, that was like filling that hole. And I finally got to step 4. And, you know, I finally got off the pink cloud, because I finally started to discover what I'd been eating over. And it was very challenging. And I felt carried through that, but I started feeling, you know. Every day wasn't a miracle anymore, you know. And I came into OA with a lot of anger toward my parents, especially. And that took me many, many years to get over through the steps. And I did a 4-step that was like every person I ever resented in my life. Like, it took me 2 years to do my 4-step. Because, you know, I had their names, but I had all the things that I resented. And we did it out of the big book, you know, where it was the columns. And my sponsor, you know, I said to her, you know, what about things that happened to me when I was a kid, what was my part in that? And she said, you know, you didn't like it. That was your part. It wasn't your fault. None of this is blame. It's just what did I do that contributed to the situation? Well, all I did was, you know, like I said, I didn't like it. And so she gave me this huge blessing of adding, like, which I guess she called it a 5th column, where she said, what would God have you do today? She said, write what God would have you do today. And that was, you know, kind of like the magic words for me, because it helped me. By the time I finished that exhaustive 4-step and read it to her, as I say, I'd probably been there a couple of years by then, and I just had a better way, and I started, you know, living the 12 steps. I started 10 minutes. Okay, so I think I'm gonna just talk for a little while, because I'm still back in the 80s or the 90s by now. But what I really wanted to talk about also was the idea that I wasn't quite at the 11th step, but you know, how I sought God's will, and how I found a God that wasn't going to be angry at me. And after I'd been around for a couple years, I was really upset because our house wouldn't sell. Like, you know, looking back on it now, it's like, you know, people get cancer, people die. There's all these really bad things that happen in the world that have happened to me. And I mean, not that I anyway, you know what I'm saying. And I was angry at God because my house wouldn't sell. And it was kind of a scary neighborhood. I had a lot of fear of living there. But so I went to something, I don't know, it was like an OA birthday party or something like that, where I heard this speaker talk about a friend of hers that had gotten killed in a car accident. And she had to completely revise her understanding of God because she couldn't accept a God. She couldn't live comfortably with a God who would kill her friend in a car accident or cause her friend to die. And I hadn't really heard people, I maybe had heard it, but I at that point I was open to hearing it. And I called her, which was shocking for me because, like I said, I didn't make a lot of calls. And I asked her, what did you do? How did you do that? And she told me. And what she said was, she said that she, you know, remember I said about the 10 things that I had as my God list? Well, that list wasn't big enough anymore. And so she said, for 30 days, write down one quality a day, no more, no less, one quality a day of what you want God to be, what I wanted God to be. And she said, I think she might have said, call me in 30 days. Anyway, I did that, and I wrote down God, stuff like God loves without conditions, and that God is like the protective big brother that I never had, and that God is never angry at me or disappointed in me. And I still have that list, and I still, and she said to read it. She, after I read it to her, she said, that's what your God is now. And I believed it. And that was the beginning of my, you know, focus on God. And she said to read one a day. You'll have this list, read one a day. And I still do that. I have more lists. I have like 4 months worth of lists now. So I rotate them. But because I've had to keep getting God bigger to deal with the deaths, to deal with the disappointments in life, to deal with my husband going to the hospital, you know, whatever it is, it happens to all of us. That's life. And if I have to rely on life to make me happy and make me feel comfortable and take away my pain, or maybe not my pain, but my trauma around the pain, I'm sunk. If I rely on God, and I have to keep expanding my understanding of God so that I can do that. So I do a lot of that kind of spiritual work. And you know, last August I took a candle for 34 years, and if I stay abstinent until August 26th this year, it'll be 35. And do the math. I came in when I was 35. I'm going to start being in OA longer than I wasn't. And my life is amazing because I'm not tyrannized by food. I don't weigh 250 pounds anymore. I've lost like about 100 pounds. And the one thing I just wanted to say before I completely finish, and that's now I'm going to refer to this. I had to really keep the focus on my spiritual recovery because every time I started thinking about or losing some weight and then just thinking, oh, I'm really cool now, even though I was like, you know, and it took me decades to lose all of that weight. But I lost enough at the beginning that it was heady, you know, like I'm pretty cool. And then I would gain weight. I used to weigh myself once a month, and I'd gain a pound, and then I'd be, oh my God, I'm no good, you know. And I heard this woman say this, and this is what I'm going to close with, is that I kept focus on the spiritual and the emotional recovery through the steps and through my relationship with God, and I left the physical alone. And I heard this woman say, I'm trying to love the body I have rather than trying to find a body I can love. Mm-hmm. And once I started doing that, I started slowly losing more weight. And I thank God for my life. I'm so grateful to be here. So if there's any time left, I can we can do questions.
Thank you.
Mary Pat, ask a question.
Hi. Well, Laura, let's see. Can you talk a little bit more, because the topic of higher power is really important right now, and you had recently said something about, like, calamity, reminding me some stuff in Step 11. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, thanks. I remember we did talk about that recently. One of the things that I read in the big book when I read it for the first time.
If you could repeat the question.
Oh, the question is referring to a conversation I had with someone who just asked this question about dealing, using a higher power to deal with calamity and bad things, and also the 11th step. So, referring to the calamity thing, I think, those of us who know the big book, which is theoretically all of us, when I first read it, there was this line that really reassured me. It said, if we rely on God and do as we think he would have us, he'll enable us to match calamity with serenity. And I was like, that's it. That's it, because I knew that everything wasn't going to be great all the time. I mean, look around. I mean, now. But back then, bad things happen all the time. And I didn't want to be in a program where I was going to be told, well, everything works out for the best, Like, there's a reason for everything. Well, that's not the kind of higher power I felt comfortable believing in. And when I made that list, that first list, the 30-day list or the 30-thing list, I had to make room for that. And so that, God helping us match calamity with serenity was so important to me. And I just lived on that. And I live on that today. And then the thing about the 11th step, which is, and you know how, like, we read stuff and then we read it again some other time and we're like, I never saw that before. So that happened to me with the 11th step. I was reading, 3 or 4 years ago, I was reading the AA 12 and 12 and the 11th step in there. And it lists, it's very much in this vein. It was written in the 50s, so, he's talking about, perhaps that boy didn't come home from the war. And, and it talks about, or perhaps you're, you see people around you pairing off and you're alone. But here's how, it just talks about all these different situations that could happen where you're not, it's not what you thought you wanted or not what you wanted, but then he explains, like, the relationship you have with your higher power, that you get to decide what that relationship is. Nobody's going to tell you, you got to believe in God like this. You get to understand God as you want, and it's all in We Agnostics, in the big book. So at the end of that chapter, step 11, in that AA book, it talks about, I wish I could quote it. I don't have time to pull it up on my phone, but I'll just end with this. It reassures us that God is there for us. And, no matter how much it doesn't look like it in the world of man, and it's very badly paraphrased, but again, it's that same idea of, matching calamity with serenity. Thank you so much.